Welcome and aloha. Thanks for joining us at ThinkTech Hawaii. And for those of you who are willing to and support ThinkTech, this is fundraising time. ThinkTech lives on its donations. It's truly appreciated. Anything that you're willing to put in, go to ThinkTech Hawaii website, click the donate button, and help us out. And today we have with us, returning for the first time since September, retired Hawaii judge Sandra Sims, and author, working on her second book, back from Vegas, and other points that may or may not be disclosed in the course. Tina Patterson in Germantown, Maryland, mediator, arbitrator, business coach, consultant, and master of many trades, and also co-chair of the American Bar Association Section of Dispute Resolutions, Women in Dispute Resolution Committee, which is one of our more active and more productive committees out there. They presented resolutions, directories, and other things to really move the needle in diversity, in dispute resolution, and in law, which have both tended to lag behind a lot of the rest of the country and the professions, unfortunately. And Ben Davis, former chair of the American Bar Association Section of Dispute Resolution, and now professor, visiting professor at Washington and Lee School of Law, and professor emeritus from the University of Toledo School of Law. Welcome, all of you. Well, we're almost all the way through midterm, still waiting for a few House results, but basically the majorities and most of the positions have been determined. So, Ben, where does that leave us? Where are we headed? Or can we even guess?
Well, I had a couple thoughts. One was much of the reporting on the election has been about the quote-unquote absence of a red wave, and what happened to the red wave, and where's the red tsunami, etc. Even a lot of the little cartoons are all framed in that way. But the thing that bothered me is that framing focuses on the red. My thing is that this was a blue wave. A very blue wave across America. Just think of all the deniers who did not get in. You saw some flips of state, both state houses in Michigan. You saw all five of the ballot initiatives on abortion. They passed in Michigan, they passed in California, they passed in I can't remember the third state.
Even Kentucky.
Vermont was the third one in terms of pro-choice. And then Kentucky and Montana, they voted down the efforts at anti-choice. And so, you know, that's 5 for 5. And so, that idea, at least to me, of let us change the conversation and think in terms of we are living a blue wave, which I think is going to continue. And the second part of it is that there was a term used over the past few months since Dobbs of this was Rovember. And Rovember was the term for this time. And I'm convinced that Rovember is what happened, what you saw, Ronami happen across mm-hmm. this country. And that energy from people losing their rights and saying, this is not the way it's going to be. See, that's the way I would frame it. There's some talk about, you know, people worried about democracy. And I respect that because, you know, when Pelosi's husband was hit, I could see how people would say, this is getting political violence crazy. And, you know, in the chaos we can't have. But I thought the two things that really struck me the most were we had a blue wave or a Ronami. That happened, and that's the way we should think about it going into the Georgia runoff and on for this next couple years. And I just have to tell a joke, which is that somebody put up something that said that a runoff is not a parenting approach for Herschel Walker. Thank you very much. I'll be here all week. Okay. Ooh, I was snapped. I said, ouch, ouch. So,
anyway, there you go.
Ronami and Blue Wave. That's me.
Sandra, what's your take?
I agree with him on pretty much all of that, but I saw something else, or at least I sensed something else, and that is the power of young people. Because I don't think there was any way to, at least in terms of how the media and pundits approached it, it didn't seem to be a way for them to even determine or to measure what that was going to look like. I mean, we knew the young people were out there, but I don't think it was any, they didn't quite know how to gauge what's going on in their heads, except by maybe you'll see, you know, a march or protest, and there were plenty of those. Part of it's too, because, you know, we're in a new, you know, I'm old school and stuff, and so I still have a phone here, but, you know, they don't have, a lot of young folks don't have these home phone numbers and landlines and stuff, which is where a lot of posters really start to call. And then even if they get your cell number and try to call you there, you know, they're from the generation that, I know my kids, they don't answer the phone if they don't know who it is. So you're not going to get that, and you're not going to get the responses in the traditional way that we think of determining polls. That's gone. That's gone by way of, you know, all the other media and forums that are out there. I think back to the protests we had here in Honolulu following George Floyd's death. And George Floyd's murder, I should say. And there was a huge rally here in Honolulu, over 10,000 young people for Black Lives Matter. And, you know, Black people are not a small portion of the population here in Honolulu. And that protest was organized by teenagers. And they did it via their media, the Instagram and the TikTok and all the other stuff. That's how they organized it, and all the different high schools and stuff. And they came together, and those, I was just, and I thought to myself, my goodness gracious, we've got a whole generation out here that we don't even, I mean, not that we're not counting them in, but we can't read them like we can so-called read, you know, what Latinos are going to do, what Blacks are going to do, what women are going to do. We can't read them. And I like that. I like that. And they're asserting that leader. They're asserting that leadership. They're asserting their positions. And this is the generation that, you know, doesn't take any crap.
Yeah. And a couple of the points that you raised, and you raised many that are really worth digging into and considering more. And we've only got half hour to work with, so we'll do what we can. But one is, that's the generation for whom reproductive choice is a present, right in their life, in their face reality.
Exactly.
Looking at choices and consequences in a very immediate, very personal way.
Exactly.
And the second thing is, that's also the generation that, as you really accurately identified, is the most subjected to the social media barrage as their news source, as their opinion source. And you've combined those two things, which have been in conflict since at least 2016, where the social media has been pushing exactly what Ben talked about, the red wave, not just for the 2022 campaign, but for most of the last 6 years, if not all. Mm-hmm. And now you've got an entire generation that's basically saying, not with my life, you don't.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, Tina, what strikes you about what might have been somewhat unexpected or different, or may tell us something about what happened in the midterms?
Thank you, Chuck. I think a couple of things. I agree with the media attention regarding the lack of the red wave. And what I saw was that there, as far as social media, is that there is a growing distaste for using social media to weaponize. And we're seeing it more so with young people. Yes, It's a media outlet. It's a way to get information. But if it starts to be information that is going to be harmful or basically attempts to hurt someone, we're starting to see more pushback. And I think the younger people are taking the lead, but others as well are saying, you know, can you stop with the false narrative and putting forward mm-hmm. these stories? It's thinking about Speaker Pelosi's husband. There was a conversation. The governor of Virginia decided to make a comment regarding what happened to Speaker Pelosi's husband. And it was very, I'll say it was very unkind. People not only spoke out, but they were consistent. And we're seeing this where you can't make comments that literally step away from civility. It's okay to have a different perspective, but when your comments are harmful or hurtful, voters are reminding these elected officials, that's not acceptable. That's not the narrative we want to carry forward. I think we're also seeing people looking at the bigger picture. Yes, we're talking about reproductive rights, but what else does this impact? Does this impact who I choose to marry, who I love?
Yes.
It is generating some concerns, some fear, some call to action, although it's not been branded as such. So I'm seeing more of that where people are saying, you know, Roe versus Wade and the overturning is just the tip of the iceberg. If we don't stop this now, this is going to become a runaway train. And we're certainly going to be talking about where do we live? Who can we live with? And as I indicated earlier, who do we love? But I have been very pleased with this pushback on, you know, that narrative that you're putting, it's not appropriate, you know, wishing that somebody be sent back home because their spouse has been harmed. That's not appropriate conversation.
It's not.
As a leader, the expectation is higher. And I'm glad to hear our young people saying it, but I'm glad to see more of a groundswelling from voters overall that they're just saying, that's just not acceptable. You know, don't bring that forward.
No, and those are great insights. Yeah. So one of them raises a question. Do you think people connected what happened to Paul Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi's husband, to the January 6th violence? Was it the logical outcome, the next step in the January? Was that what the January 6th people were really intending to do if they got in there and got control?
Well, if I could jump in on that, you know, the guy, when he got into the house, was yelling, "Where's Nancy?" And that's an immediate resonance with what was going on January 6th, inescapable exactly. for anybody, you know? And exactly. and I think that, you know, that political violence aspect of that was brought very, very abruptly back to people that mm-hmm. you can't ignore what you saw with your own eyes and what the chaos and the people mm-hmm. behind the chaos want to have happen, I think is okay. It reminded me in a way of the governor's race in Arizona, where Katie Hobbs did not debate Carrie Lake the whole time. And I remember pundits saying that she was looking weak and all that. And she just came out with a little message where she said, well, you know, people know who I am. People know who she is. They just got to decide they're going to be adults, you know? And I was like,
that's right.
She was really smart. You know, I don't have to debate her. I'm serious. I'm an adult and she's who she is, you know, and it worked for her. You know, I just thought that was really insightful by her as a candidate, you know, you want chaos, you want to actually run a country for everybody, you know?
Yeah. And I think you're absolutely right, Ben. And I was thinking of the same thing as like when you're tying what occurred in January 6th, even though there were these efforts to minimize it and make it like, oh, that nothing happened. But by that investigative panel bringing out so many of the details and the horrid, sickening, disgusting details of what was taking place and what was done, you know, to the officers, how frightened and how they have the effect of, I mean, they were trying to kill Pence. I mean, good Lord. The effect that it had on the representatives who were in, they were trapped. They were literally trapped. And I don't think it wasn't until we got a real strong sense, I mean, some of us thought that, but we got a real strong sense of what was occurring when the panel started talking about those things. And then when you see that, it's hard for people to just sit back, oh, no, that was nothing. Oh, yeah, that was not a nothing. I mean, this affected people in deep, people died. And then when the Pelosi, when her husband was attacked, and we come back to that, I think you're right, Ben, it's like people were just starting to say, wait a minute, this we've gone too far. We've gone too far. This is not what we're about. There are issues that need to be determined in this country. We can't just sit here and argue about the election in 2020. There's stuff going on. There are things that we need to take care of. There's a world in crises, and we're arguing about who did the, was the election in 2020 stolen? And of course it was not. So I think with those that had those single issues, I think the, like Carrie Lake is a really good example of that, because there was, at least to my knowledge, I don't know that she addressed any real issue other than what happened in the past or what she thinks her interpretation of what happened in the past. People are not concerned. They want to prepare for what's happening now. We got to take care of our communities, our children, our schools, our, you know, our world. We got bigger fish to fry than you guys' grievances. I mean, that was another piece that I got from, at least maybe that's just my own personal thing, but I feel really strongly about that. And I'm sure there, and I know people that feel the same, that come on now, we got stuff to do here. We don't have time for this foolishness. And then when you get terribly mean-spirited about it and you're turning to violence, it's like, you know, I'm out of here. I'm not doing this, you know?
No, and but, those are really great points to bring out and bring up and understand. And they raise the question, did what happened in the lead up to and the midterms and the aftermath of the midterms, did those, at least to some extent, effectively discredit the replacement theory, the that whole set of Republican talking points that Trump and McCarthy and others, Boebert, Green, Gates, have been living off of for the last few years?
I think it has.
What's left of those? Yeah, Tina.
I'll just say this quickly because it's not specific answer to your question. I think it has, and I think it's going to impact the conversation regarding who becomes the next Speaker of the House. Kevin McCarthy is not favored. He's got to run just like everyone else. And it's partially because of these theories that he's been putting forward, where the Republicans are saying, do we really want this narrative to come from our Speaker? Not necessarily. You know, yes, Nancy could, you know, representing the minority group, but Kevin, not so much. And I think we're seeing this where the distaste for carrying that narrative forward, people are distancing themselves. Some Republicans are saying, hold up, let's not talk about 2024. That's too far away. Right now, we need to stabilize.
We got stuff to do. I noticed today, you know, Nancy Pelosi stepped down and said she's not going to run for Speaker, which, and then she even mentioned about passing the torch to a different generation, which, like, and following what you say, Tina, it's going to just change the conversation because much of their capital has been spent on, Republicans' capital has been spent on demonizing Nancy Pelosi. So, you know, you don't have that to do. You got to, if you put someone else up there, and I think she's an extremely brilliant woman, Lord have mercy. But she's like basically saying, you're not going to kick me around. Going to put someone else up here who's going to be talking about what we're going to do for the country, and you guys go after that person and see what you're going to do. And I think that's really what she's done, is kind of thrown that gauntlet down. It's like, okay, do you want to do something for the country, or you just want to, you know, play games with me?
And strategically, that may be, and then we'll go straight to you, Ben, but strategically, that may be a brilliant move because
she's brilliant.
It moves the focus, for 16 years. She's been the leader of the Democratic Party in the House, including majority. And it's put the focus on the leadership and the direction of the choices. and on shifting the leadership, changing the leadership to people that are more in tune with and aligned with the real issues, the real values that voters have brought into play in these midterm elections. Yeah, Ben.
Yeah, I agree 100% with what's been said. And, you know, I'm kind of reminded of those big waves you have off Hawaii where you see those surfers and those blue waves. And I just feel like a whole lot of cold water got blown on a lot of Republicans right now. Blue water got blown on them. The problem that they have is, you know, they didn't have a platform in 2000. Far as I've seen, they don't have a platform on anything today except the classic Republican one, which is, you know, reduce taxes, right? That's all they got. And they got, and on all these issues, whether it's climate change or infrastructure or, you know, these fundamental rights issues. I mean, the only thing I saw some of these candidates on the Republican side do was kind of delete things from their website that they'd been saying before when they started to feel that Roe heat. But you didn't hear, you know, that's all I saw. I didn't see anybody saying, stepping out of line. And the other thing is that, you know, I think it's Clyburn said that the blood of politics is money, right? And if their donors are the same ones that have been before who are telling them this story that they need to say, I don't see how they get out of that box of being how they've been. And how they've been has been kind of like a little bit of chaos, or a lot of chaos.
A lot of chaos.
A lot of chaos.
And they've fomented chaos everywhere fomented chaos.
And I'm just not sure.
Yeah.
You know?
And what if you flip that perspective on its head, Ben? Instead of saying these Republican talking points are what the donors wanted to see them sell in advance, what if it were the Republicans going to the donors saying, we can sell in advance these talking points, they're going to serve your interest? And now they haven't.
I was reading somewhere today where some of the following Trump's announcement that he's going to run against, some of the major donors that were part of his campaign before, that they're not doing it. It's time to move on. So he's not going to, you know, I mean, he may be out there, and it may very well be that that's all the Republicans will be able to put up, because he's just going to be in the way of everything. And they just can't shake themselves of him.
That's
unless he goes to jail.
That's a really important point. You know, between Trump and DeSantis, do you see either one of those two letting go, giving up, deferring to the other?
No.
So unless one of them goes to jail.
Right. So you got Youngkin who's trying to come in, you know, and you got Asa Hutchinson down in Arkansas coming in. But, you know, the comment that I just make about, if you look across that group, right, is like, what are they going to do for the country? I mean, one of them will be divisive, and the other one will be, we're going to bring people together, right? That's going to be the two games. But I'm talking about the policy underneath. The only policy they have underneath is cut taxes. That's an old story. And, you know, cut Medicare, cut Medicaid, cut Social Security, all that, which is what Scott was running his Republican committee.
It's just
on. That's back to 1960s kind of a Republican policy, you know, and that's not for a modern world. And what are we going to not support Ukraine, you know, and all that stuff. You know, I mean, I'm like, that's not serious. It's not serious. Even if you're a nice guy, it's still not serious, you know.
Yeah. It's like, what you got?
So what's it going to take for Kevin McCarthy to get 218 votes, not only to become Speaker of the House, but to get any legislation by?
I don't know, because we don't know what they stand for. I'm like with Ben, we don't know what they stand for anything other than the tax cut. So if someone comes forth with something, there doesn't seem to be like a any sort of issue or policy, like Ben has said, that they've become known for and they're wanting to vouch for, that you're going to get a majority of people in the country to vote for. I mean, it's great to do these Republican primaries because you can do that. But are you going to appeal to a national electorate? And he didn't do it in 2020. He's certainly not going to do it in 2024.
Well, and Ben's point's a really important one. If the Republicans, with the media and history and so many things on their side, came out of the midterms the way they have, losing the Senate and getting such a narrow majority in the House that their own factions may prevent them from being able to do anything.
Exactly. Exactly.
What's going to happen in 2024? Where are we headed?
Well, maybe I'm an optimist, okay? But my view is that the American people, at least this time around, showed that they weren't going to get played. And I think that American people have got an attitude, which is they're not going to get themselves played. They, you know, the old fool me once, shame on me, but fool me twice, you know, or shame on you, shame on me. I got it all right. George Bush, whatever, but...
We get the point.
You know what I mean? It's just, I may be wrong. I mean, it's different places and different things, but I'm just not going to do red state, blue state here, but I'm going to do more sort of along the lines of, how is it that you can live in a state and be one of the poorest states in the United States, and you can vote against things that would help you to be better by voting for people who will keep you poor? I mean, that's a question to every American I see in every state that's down in the last 10 or so states on the lists on everything, whether it's child mortality, literacy, education, poverty, whatever. It's like, how many times do you have to be in this spot until you say, you know, there's something wrong with this, where I'm voting for you, and then you're saying I need to blame this person over here for my problem? I don't know how long that has to go on, but yeah, it just seems to me it's gone on a long time for a lot of people who are hurting badly, you know. And
okay, in our last minute, Sandra? Any idea where we're headed?
I'm with Ben. I'm an optimist, and I have tremendous faith in our young people and their ability to remake this country and address the issues, because there's so much of what, you know, there's so much of the rights that we sort of generation fought for that they've had, to see those things being at stake of being lost is motivation for them. I think you look at the gun rights, you know, the gun rights issue. The young people are the ones that are most affected by that, by this avalanche of, you know, gun violence in their schools. I think for most of us, the notion of having to do, drills for shooters never occurred to us going to school. But this is a part of their world, and it's just not, it doesn't make sense because it's not necessary. And I think they're seeing this, like, this is not the way. I mean, I'm not against people having guns. That's not my position. But I think there's certain things, you know, people just shouldn't be walking around with assault rifles. It's just not necessary. And for them to be so directly impacted by these things is something for them to kind of fight for. And I think that's what you're seeing.
And so, Tina, to finish us off, let me phrase it a little differently. What do you think are the markers that may tell us where we're headed in the next few years?
Markers. People are literally organizing. They're coming together, and they're not using the tools that Nielsen ratings and other pollsters have used in the past. They're being innovative, they're being creative, they're taking different approaches and saying, you know what, I'm going to text you, this is where you need to be, or let's get together and have a circle. And so in some ways it's innovative, in other ways it's the approaches that we saw our grandparents take, we saw our elders take when they didn't have technology. And I think that's the marker that we're seeing, where people are saying enough is enough. Between the events of January 6th, the increase in school shootings, and people, for the most part, never thought that Roe versus Wade would be overturned. And the reality is it's happening. So now what? And now means we need to take a different course of action. What worked in the past, it isn't working. So, if the older folks can't do it, the younger folks will.
They got to do it. Exactly.
Well, that's a great note to leave things on. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Think Tech Hawaii, support us if you're willing. And happy Thanksgiving, all. We'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Thank you so much for watching Think Tech Hawaii. If you like what we do, please like us and click the subscribe button on YouTube and the follow button on Vimeo. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, and donate to us at thinktechhawaii.com. Mahalo.